morning again, Your Honor. Pleased to be back. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Joanna Christensen, and I represent the appellant Juan Prado in this matter. This case brings the issue of a procedural error the district court made in refusing to consider any unwarranted disparities in this case unless they were presented on a nationwide basis. The government and I actually agree that the court made that procedural error in this case, and unless the court has questions about that, based on the Sanchez case. Okay, go right ahead.
Since the Supreme Court held in Gaul that a sentence within the guideline range cannot be attacked as a violation of 3553A6, that is, since there is no substantive claim, how could there be a procedural claim? Suppose the district court had said, your argument under 3553A6 is bad because today is Tuesday. Right? That would be a stupid thing for a district judge to say, but the because clause doesn't matter. The only thing that matters is the argument is bad because authoritative law says that unwarranted disparity can't be invoked when the sentence is within the range.
I certainly understand the judge's your question, Your Honor. And unfortunately, I think the Sanchez case issued by this court puts that into some question. And other circuit courts have also questioned that.
Do you think the Sanchez case or any other case could put the Supreme Court's decision in Gaul into question?
Well, there's certainly a conflict looking at Gaul and then looking at...
If there's a conflict between Gaul and any decision by any lower court...
Gaul controls.
Yes, who wins?
Supreme Court always
That's
wins.
That's why they call it the Supreme Court, right? So the Supreme Court has said, I don't need to quote you the language. I'm sure you know it. Supreme Court has said if the district judge has computed the guidelines correctly and sentenced within the guidelines, unwarranted disparity, A6 has been satisfied. Stop. What? Right? And since as a substantive matter that's true, I just don't understand what difference it can make what statement the district judge puts in the because clause. Suppose a district judge is ignorant of Gaul, right? And he puts, the example I gave you, because it's Tuesday, the judge puts something weird in the because clause. That's your contention here. The district judge puts something weird in the because clause
right.
when announcing the only conceivable rule of law, which is... I'm bound by Gaul. Right?
I understand your position. Unfortunately, we're in the position where this court and other circuit courts have extended Gaul. Is probably not the right word.
No, I think the right word would be contradicted Gaul.
Contradicted Gaul. And that provides us some basis to make this argument. I think that this argument after Gaul was not received very well by this court, and I have made it before and not been received very well because of Gaul. And between Gaul and now, certainly Sanchez, I believe, is the last word at this point, it seems to have been widened by the circuits to consider disparity. And this court has noted that mandate not to consider disparity, or you can't argue disparity if it's a within the guideline, that doesn't ring as true when courts can disregard guidelines such as the career offender, disregard guidelines in the child pornography.
That's something of which Gaul was unaware. Gaul was about variances from the guidelines.
Certainly.
And, of course, it's the Supreme Court that gave us Booker. You're not going to say, oh, gee, the justices didn't know about Booker, so Gaul shouldn't be followed.
I'm sure they knew about all of it. The question is what's in Gaul and then what's happened since. And the precedent that we have is that this is something that can be considered by the court and that on review that perhaps a within-guideline sentence means the judge has considered it. But when the judge doesn't know that he can't consider it, that's a procedural error. And I recognize that Gaul is a problem, but I'm not making this up out of whole cloth. I'm relying on this circuit court.
You recognize that Gaul is a problem, but your brief doesn't even cite it. There's no attempt to reconcile your position with Gaul.
Well, Your Honor, I'm basing it on the case law that came after Gaul from different circuits that has said that this is an appropriate argument to make. And in this case, particularly, this is an appropriate argument to make. This is not, simply... a child pornographer saying child pornographers all over get lesser sentences. This is a very discrete set of facts, a very discrete Operation Toe Scam investigation, and probably cannot be duplicated nationwide. Maybe something that happened in Chicago only, although that seems unlikely. But it's one investigation, one scheme, and the defendants happen to be prosecuted separately. But in this case, it was Mr. Prado who received the worst sentence out of the lot. And in a situation like this, where they were almost all the same guidelines, he was the only one who got a within-guideline sentence. That's a significant factor, and this court and other circuit courts have held that the court should have can consider that. Perhaps this is an issue that is a Supreme Court issue challenging Gall. And Gall is an issue here, and part of the reason not dealt with is because...
I'm sympathetic to your argument in a way, because the judge can consider sentences given to others. The problem is it's not because of A6. It's because under Kimbrough and similar cases, the guidelines just don't constrain the judge. The judge can consider anything. The judge can have his own penal philosophy. And that's the puzzle. Your whole brief is pitched on a supposed error about A6, when I should think the argument in the district court and here would have been, the district court made an error by supposing that A6 is the only ground on which he could give a lower sentence. That would be an error. But that doesn't seem to be the nature of your argument. Your argument here is pitched on A6 rather than the ability to consider everything.
Well, A6 is what frames this argument, certainly.
That's and it's the one problem. You should have taken A6 and expunged it from your mind, right? If the sentence is going to be within the guidelines, A6 goes...
But what if it's not going to be in the guidelines?
About what other people got and what's a good sentence here are still good arguments.
Correct.
It's just that they aren't being made in your brief.
Certainly I made them in my brief. I talk about these other defendants and the comparison that was made with them.
Yes, through the lens of A6, the one thing that doesn't matter.
Well, A6 is still part of the statute. It still matters to those of us who practice in federal court and the district courts when they're sentencing. But Gall certainly didn't write...
If you want to set this case up, a case like this, up for argument, forget about A6, assume we're going to follow the Supreme Court, and then make a Kimbrough-style argument, which is a completely different style of argument.
Well, I respectfully, Your Honor, I can't forget about A6 because it's still there. It's still part of the parlance of 3553. And Gall did not unwrite A6. It did not remove A6 from the consideration. And this could be a Kimbrough-style argument. I did not make that argument because I'm limited to what the record allows me to argue. And in this part, the district court made a procedural error. I understand your concern with Gall, but our argument is that this court has allowed it. The district court made that error, and it affected Mr. Prado's sentence.
Well, the problem I have is you don't have any details in terms of the other defendants. Not much detail other than the guideline range and the sentence they received. We don't know anything about mitigation. We don't know a lot of those factors. So even if it was an error, I don't think you've made the case for it being harmful. I think it would be harmless. Just put Gall aside in that whole discussion. I don't know that you made it factually anyway.
Sir, there was some information in the pre-sentence report, and that's essentially what we're limited mm-hmm. to because of what was presented. There's a little bit more about Officer Wodnicki, who was the officer specifically referenced by defense counsel at sentencing. His bribe amount was much higher. I believe it was $35,000 rather than Mr. Prado's was just above $10,000. There was some information, and the problem is, partly, defense counsel did not bring in that information. That would have been a much better argument from my point of view. But it was very clear the district court would not consider that. The government attempted to provide its version of why that information didn't matter, and the court said nope and kept going without considering it. I'm not sure it would have made any difference at the sentencing hearing. On appeal, would I rather be arguing specifics about those cases and comparing them detail by detail to Mr. Prado's case? Yes, but that's not, unfortunately, that's not the record we have, but what we do have is the district court flat out refusing to consider anything. And at that point, what is a defense attorney to do when she is trying to secure a favorable sentence for her client? Go by the district court's wishes. And I see I'm out of time. I urge the court to reverse and remand for resentencing.
Thank you, Ms. Christensen. Mr. Donovan.
May it please the court. Counsel Michael Donovan on behalf of the United States.
Could I just start here with Ms. Christensen's last comment, because at best, the district court mentioned that Prado didn't have any facts regarding the aggravating and mitigating factors in the Wodnicki case. But what evidence is there that the district court relied on that as an independent dispositive reason? I mean, because he did cut the government off when the prosecutor indicated that he could advise the court as to those related cases. So what have we got here?
I believe, Your Honor, that the district court did consider the merits of the defendant's argument, and I think there are three reasons for that. First of all, each time that the district court made a reference to considering disparities on a national basis, the district court then went on to reference the merits of the factors that were presented before the district court.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, the language used by the district court indicates that the district court found wanting the presentation. In other words, the district court specifically said, without any knowledge on the part of defense counsel about what were the factors or circumstances mitigating or aggravating, that has no bearing on the facts before me as to the factors that are present here. And the district court made those statements of that nature at three different points after counsel had raised this issue about Mr. Wodnicki's case. So I think it's fair to conclude that the district court was, while concerned about the lack of evidence presented on a national basis, then moved on to consider the merits, such as they were, of the defendant's presentation. In addition, the information that was presented could not reasonably have changed the outcome of the district court's sentence, because the information was far too inadequate for it to do so. It was simply too weak to make a reasonable comparison between these two defendants. So, with respect to the error and the reference to this legal principle about national basis, it certainly was harmless because the district court made an independent finding and rejected the statements or the evidence presented by the defendant. And again, as to the idea that even if more had been presented, the district court would not have considered it, I think is an unfair argument to the district court. That this was raised at the very last instant, after allocution, before sentencing. The district court accepted the information that was presented, accepted the confession by counsel that the defendant had no information about aggravating or mitigating factors, and then said that that information was insufficient to affect the decision. So for all of these reasons, Your Honors, we would ask that the judgment of the district court be affirmed. If there are no further questions, thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, counsel. The case is taken under advisement.